I'm Linus. Welcome to Kids Talk Church History, a one-of-a-kind podcast where kids investigate the history of the church. Over 2,000 years ago, Jesus said, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." Has he kept his promise? How has Jesus built and preserved his church against all odds? Come with us on a trip through history to find the answer, here on Kids Talk Church History.
Have you ever sent an email or a text to the wrong person? Well, if you were here with that person, you could tell them what happened. But I'm going to tell you about a similar mistake that turned out to be disastrous. It happened in 16th century Spain when a smuggler of religious books delivered a book to the wrong person. Stay tuned for the rest of this gripping story and a lot more.
Hi, I'm Grace. I'm 11 years old and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina.
I'm Linus. I'm 13 years old and I live in San Diego, California.
I'm Lucas. I am now 16 years old and I live in San Diego, California.
I love these cliffhangers. Okay, now that you've got us to the edge of our seats, what happened?
Well, it was 1567, and Spain was a Roman Catholic country where Protestant teaching was considered heretical. Already, some people had been in prison just for sounding like Protestants. Other people had left the country. One of the people who had escaped was Juan Perez de Pineda, who became pastor for the Spanish community of immigrants in Geneva and translated the New Testament, the Psalms, Calvin's Catechism, and a few other Protestant books into Spanish. These books were then smuggled into Spain by another refugee, Julian Hernandez, known as Julianillo. Let's hope I get those pronunciations right, because he was short. He worked as a printer and a proofreader, but was also a smuggler of books into Spain.
How did he smuggle the books?
Well, he dressed as a merchant and hid the Spanish translations inside barrels, then took them to Spain by mule. He knew where to bring them, to the house of someone who would later distribute them to others. But on that day, he made a fatal mistake. He didn't know that in the town there were two people with the same name, so he ended up delivering the books to a faithful Roman Catholic who brought them to the Inquisition. Until then, the Roman Catholic Church in Spain didn't know that there were so many Protestants in the country. This was the day when they started a fierce persecution against them.
And the smuggler?
Well, he was arrested, tortured, and then burned at the stake. The authorities tried hard to destroy all the books and Bibles that had been smuggled, but some survived.
And I would imagine that more people left Spain. It must have been a difficult decision, especially for pastors who were leaving their congregation behind. But it seems that some were able to reach many more people with their books and translations.
Yes, there were a couple of Spanish pastors who translated the Bible and others who revised those translations.
And I assume they lived safely because they were out of Spain.
Well, they were safer than they would have been in Spain, yeah. But the authorities were still after them. And since the emperor of the German region, Charles V, was originally from Spain, he often helped to hunt down these refugees. Some adopted new names so that people would not recognize them, and some of them were still tried in Spain even after they left. Juan Perez, for example, was condemned by the Spanish Inquisition, but because he was not in Spain, they made a life-size puppet looking like him and burned that instead.
Well, at least it didn't hurt. What was the point of doing that?
I think it was a warning to others. Like, we're burning a puppet of this guy because he's not in Spain, but if we catch you other Protestants, we'll burn you for real.
When we think of the Reformation, we don't usually think about Spain.
No, I always thought that Spain stayed completely Roman Catholic during the Reformation, but I guess the writings of Luther and other reformers arrived there too, and some people took them to heart.
And I've read that in spite of the persecution, the city of Seville has named a street in honor of Juan Perez, the translator of the New Testament, and one in honor of Cassiodoro de Reina, who translated the whole Bible.
Yes, and there are other streets devoted to other men and women of the Spanish Reformation, including some who were tortured by the Inquisition. I think it's really hard to think about the torture that they had to endure because of what they believe.
We haven't explained what the Inquisition was.
Well, from what I understand, it was a court that was established to interrogate people who were suspected of teaching heresies. Maybe the initial motivation was good, I don't know, but the whole thing went overboard. The Spanish Inquisition lasted 350 years and punished Jews and Muslims along with Protestants. The punishment could be torture, imprisonment, exile, and death. But I think there was an Italian and a Spanish Inquisition, but the Spanish one was the worse of the two. But when it comes to this part of history, we'd better leave the floor to our expert, Andrew Messmer, professor at the International Faculty of Theology in Barcelona. Dr. Messmer, thank you so much for joining our podcast.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you've heard a little about what we said about the Spanish Reformation. I'm sure you have a lot to add, but is there anything that you'd like to correct about what we said?
You did a great job. I was really enjoying the story. I'm a professor, so I always focus on details. It was in 1557 when that happened. And other than that, I think you did a great job.
Well, I've read that the Reformation in Spain started with a group called Alumbrados, but I'm not really sure what they were all about. So could you tell us who they were and what did that word Alumbrados mean?
Yeah, so alumbrado means like an enlightened one, someone who kind of gets it, you could think. And they were a group of people who originated in Spain, probably because of what happened in 1492 when the Spanish government said that all the Jews and Muslims had to either become Christian or flee the country. And it seems like a lot of these Jews who decided to become Christian brought with them their understanding of scripture and their spirituality, their love for God, their love for the scriptures, their personal relationship with God. And they brought that into Christianity. And this started a movement which other people called the Alumbrado movement. So this was going on before Luther. And it's kind of like, you can't really say it's Protestant, but it had a lot in common with Protestantism, kind of like, I don't know if you guys have studied John Wycliffe or John Huss, but kind of these other characters that prepared the way for Protestantism, the Alumbrado movement could kind of be seen something similar.
So how did the writings of Luther and other reformers get into Spain? And did the Catholic Church of Spain ban them immediately?
Yeah, so they were banned immediately. They didn't ban Erasmus as quickly, but as soon as Luther's works made it into Spain by 1520, he was immediately banned. They really thought that he was a heretic and dangerous. And the only way that his works could get in were by these illegal ways of smuggling them in, like you read about Julianillo. They had to be secretly brought in by land or by sea. And the Protestants had thought up quite a number of ways of getting them in there by boat, by sea, and by many different routes. So that's the only way that they could get in there.
Oh, I know a little bit about a Spanish reformer named Juan de Valdez because I read a book about him. But was he also persecuted in Spain, or did he leave before the main wave of persecution?
So Juan de Valdez, I'm glad you read his work or one of his works, because he is kind of the beginning of Spanish Protestantism. And he wrote a book in 1529, and it was called The Dialogue of Christian Doctrine. And he just kind of talked about the basics of Christianity, but he left out a lot of stuff that Roman Catholics thought should have been in there. And his book was immediately flagged as something that had to be studied and scrutinized over and as potentially dangerous. And so he kind of understood kind of where things were headed. And so in 1529 or 1530, he ended up fleeing Spain and he went to what today we call Italy. And he continued to teach and to write down there. And he is actually the center of a huge movement in Italy of people becoming Protestant. And then from there, people went out throughout all of Europe sharing their Protestant faith. So he was a really important guy.
So then why didn't the Spanish Reformation just take off like in other parts of Europe?
Yeah, well, other parts of Europe, they had the great benefit of having the protection of the civil government, of the rulers, the kings, the emperor, or whoever. Well, I shouldn't say the emperor, but they had local rulers that were protecting them. And so that allowed them to write and to explain their faith and give people a time to see that what the reformers were saying is actually what the Bible was saying. Spain didn't have that. In fact, as we heard in the introduction, Spain's ruler was Charles V, and then his son, Philip II. And both of them were not Protestants, and especially Philip II, he did not like Protestants at all. And he was the one who actually presided over some of the burnings of Protestants. So I think it didn't take off, not because people weren't interested. There were thousands of Protestants in Spain. But when Julianillo made the mistake that he made, the Inquisition and the Spanish government used all of their power, all their resources to put as many people in jail as they could, and then to send as strong of a message as they could that if you believe this in Spain, you will be tried, you'll be found guilty, and you'll either be really heavily fined with lifelong consequences, or you will die.
So we've noticed that some of the streets in Seville were named after men and women of the Spanish Reformation. We've read some stories about the men, but who were the women?
Yeah, great question. We are finding out more and more about the women just today. Well, I shouldn't say like today, but, you know, in our modern, you know, 2020s, we're finding more and more about the women. Finally, people are getting interested in them, and we're getting finally books and articles published on them. So these women were, a lot of them were nuns, and they were studying in the, they were doing what nuns do in their convent. But preachers would come to them, as they frequently would do, to preach and to have what you and I would call, you know, Bible studies or small group Bible studies. And as they did that, they were sharing their Protestant beliefs with them. And these women in the convents were being converted. They were being convinced. They said, yeah, this is exactly what I think too. And they are really amazing, amazing women. So many women suffered so greatly for their beliefs. Some of them were burned alive, and some of them were just absolutely disgraced. Some women, after suffering or dying a normal death, and then the Inquisition finding out later that they were Protestants, they went to their house and they tore their house down and they sowed it with salt so that nothing would ever grow there again. And then they put up a big plaque warning everyone that if you're Protestant and if you have Protestants meet in your home to have a Bible study, we're going to tear your house down, sow it with salt, and put up a plaque like this as well. But these were women, brave women, who were risking not only their lives, but also the lives of their children. One thing we don't think of when we think of the Inquisition is what they would do to the children. And they would actually, your children would be punished, and then their children would be punished. They would have no money, and they couldn't serve in the government. And there were all sorts of punishments for generations to come. And these just very brave women. So we hope to continue to learn more about them and their example that they have for us today.
Why do you think so few people outside of Spain know about the Spanish Reformation?
Well, I think probably it just has to do with the language barrier. The whole Spanish-speaking world has been Roman Catholic for most of the last 500 years. In Germany, German Protestants would continue to read the writings of Luther and Melanchthon and others. And then English Protestants would read them too, and they would translate them into English, and they would translate French works into English and Dutch works into English. And thanks to English, things got out, and the whole world found out about these reformations and all these different places. But no one really got interested in Spanish, because like you all thought, they thought Spain was Roman Catholic the whole time. They didn't know very much about these reformers. And in a lot of cases, even if they were interested, they couldn't find their books. There are many instances in which there is only one copy left in the whole world of a very important book written by a Spanish Protestant, and people don't know about that one book, and they end up finding it in a library, and that's when the world finds out, wow, this person wrote this amazing work. We didn't even know about it, and here it is. So I think it just there's some we need time to get the Spanish translators translated into the Spanish reformers translated into English, so that the world can see what they were all about.
I have read that you are still finding documents about the Spanish Reformation. What is the latest document that was found?
Yeah, so we just transcribed and transcribed the Inquisition trial of a man named Juan Aventrut, and he was burned alive for his Protestant faith. And we just found this, and we just got this transcribed. We just found two letters, and they're in Latin, and they're getting ready to be translated into Spanish from a reformer named Jaime Encinas. He's the brother of the more famous Francisco de Encinas, who was the first person to translate the Bible into Greek. And then we just found some documents about Juan Perez de Pineda in Geneva. So those are three documents that were just found probably within the last 2 months.
Wow. And what translation of the Bible do you use in Spain? And is it taken from any of the translations done by the reformers?
Yeah, so we don't have in Spanish quite as many translations as we have in English, but we do have a handful. So we have the kind of like the King James version of Spanish is called the Reina Valera. Some people think that Reina Valera means Queen Valera, kind of like King James and Queen Valera, but Reina was the last name of one translator and Valera was the last name of another translator. And their Bible is the most used, and it's still being updated today. Every 20 or 30 years, they'll kind of update the language. And that's what most people use. But we also have a, like our equivalent of the New International Version, the NIV. We kind of have our equivalent of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. So we have probably a handful of Bible translations that we use, but the most used is the Reina Valera. And a lot of their language remains. So it's really neat that people, Spanish-speaking Christians today, they're still reading the words written by our original Bible translators. And that's really neat.
So these Spanish reformers, did they have any differing views of theology than we have today?
No, they were Protestants, just like you and I are. Every country, Germany, the Netherlands, England, the reformations in those countries all had a few things that maybe made them a little bit different, maybe on, you know, the Lord's Supper or on baptism or what have you, some minor differences. And you'll find that in the Spanish reformers as well, but nothing major. One of the things that I really like about the Spanish reformers is, and I think this is probably one of the things that makes them different, is that on these issues that divided Christians, they did not want to enter into those debates. And they recognized that good, godly men and women disagreed on some of these things, like on baptism and the Lord's Supper. And they did not want to make those doctrines kind of a test of faith. So they wanted the unity of the body of Christ. They didn't want to sacrifice truth. They were very clear on the essentials of the Christian faith, and they loved doctrine and loved teaching, but they also loved people. And they realized that, you know, my brother or my sister over here doesn't see things exactly like I do. Well, I'm not going to write a confession of faith that would separate me from him or her. Let's write a confession of faith that we can both say that we agree to. And I think that's a really good example for today.
So you've been researching the Spanish Reformation for some time. What has surprised you most in all your years of research?
Wow. Well, a lot of things have surprised me, so I'm not sure what has surprised me the most. I guess probably what has surprised me the most is reading the stories of how these men and women died. I often put myself in their situation, asking myself, what would I do if I were facing a trial by the Inquisition, and then certain death? How would I respond? And you read these stories of men and women who they know they are going to suffer what really must be one of the worst ways to die possible. I mean, being burned alive. That is an awful way to die, and they knew that they were going to suffer that fate. And they were doing that while the whole city was gathered to make fun of them, to scream at them how much they hate them, while people were there to mock them, to put tremendous amounts of psychological pressure on them to convert at the last moment. And these men and women were firm in their faith, and they were firm in their faith because the wonderful thing about Protestantism is that it gives us such an amazing picture of God, of his gospel, of Jesus, of what he did for us. And that vision of our great God is what got them through the last awful moments of their lives. But for them, some of them were, I don't know if to say that they were proud, but they were honored to be able to die in this way for Christ. And seeing God's work in these people's lives in their last moments has really been something that has inspired me. And I have prayed on many occasions, God, give me their faith, because it's just something beautiful to see.
Oh, do you have a favorite story about the Spanish Reformation?
A favorite story. Well, I guess probably my favorite story is God's providence in allowing monks from a monastery to escape. So there was, as you said in the introduction, Julianillo, he made his mistake, which any of us could have made. He made the mistake probably somewhere in April or May of 1557. But that same year, in probably January of that same year, there had been monks living in a monastery. And this monastery is in my town, so in Santiponce. And they had been living secretly as Protestants for years. And they obviously couldn't see in the future and know that Julianillo was going to make this mistake. But after living what they felt like was a secret life for so many years, they said, we can't do this anymore. It's not right. People think that we're monks and we're not. And so it's time for us to leave. And so just a few months before they would have been arrested and tried, they ran away and they went to Geneva. And three of the people who ran away were, and these are their last names, were Reina, Valera, and Coro. And Reina and Valera ended up translating the Bible. They ended up becoming pastors and evangelists. They ended up writing wonderful works, Confession of Faith and a Catechism. And Coro, the same. He ended up writing wonderful works. He ended up becoming a pastor. And so just to see God's providence in saving the lives of what would be three of the most important Spanish reformers, that's a pretty neat story.
Okay, we have two questions that we ask all of our guests. First, how did you become interested in church history and in the Spanish Reformation in particular?
Okay, well, I became interested in church history in Bible college. I went to a Bible college that didn't really study church history. And we kind of thought that the church had kind of been wrong the whole time until like the 1900s, which is when our church came along. And I kept asking myself, there is no way that the church was wrong for 1900 years. And then finally we got things right. And that just kind of stuck with me. And on my own, because I couldn't do it in class because there were no classes on church history, I just started reading as much as I could on church history. And I fell in love with reading, especially authors from the early church, like Justin Martyr and Irenaeus. I just fell in love with reading them. And as I got interested more and more about who God is and what he has done for the last 2,000 years and more, I just kept reading more and more about authors from the past. And then I got interested in the Spanish Reformation because I came to Spain as a missionary, and I got really frustrated because here in Spain, we have tons of missionaries, and there have been missionaries here for years and years and years, but people still look at us as kind of weird. They look at us like we don't belong, like we're foreigners. And that really frustrated me because I'm from America and people don't look at Christians like that. At least they haven't historically. And so I started asking, what's going on? What are we doing wrong that people don't look at us normally? And so I said, hey, have there ever been Christians here that were Spaniards and that were kind of a part of the society and people didn't look at them weird? And that just sent me on a big, long quest that has lasted all these years now. So, and I can say now, I've found answers to my questions. And we just recently started a network called the Credo Network. And it's for Christians and pastors, church leaders, teachers, who also want to study church history and especially Spanish church history so that we can be all things to all men, like Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9. In our case, we say to the Spaniards, we want to be Spanish. And one of the tools that we use to do that is to read these works written by Spaniards and to continue their faith in today's world.
Second question, if you could meet anyone from the time of the Reformation, who would that be?
I would want to meet the person that the Lord has used in my life to be such a huge blessing to me, and that is Cassiodoro de Reina. He was the Bible translator, and he had a wonderful balance between grace and truth. So he loved doctrine and teaching, and he was a good Christian, but he also loved his brother and his sister, and he didn't want his doctrine to separate him from them. And if I could meet anyone, I would want to meet him.
How do you say Spanish Reformation in Spanish?
La Reforma Española.
Well, that's a good note to end on, Reverend Mesmer. We are so thankful that you decided to spend this time with us. And listeners, if you visit our website, kidstalkchurchhistory.org, you'll find a link where you can enter a drawing for a free book. This time, we are giving away Simonetta Carr's book about Julia Gonzaga, an Italian noblewoman who learned the gospel from Juan de Valdez. And while you're on our website, check out past episodes, special news, recommended readings, and more. And we want to repeat a special offer we had some months ago. Just send us an email with your name and your favorite episode in this series on the Reformation, and you will be entered in a drawing for the opportunity to be with us by Zoom in a special upcoming episode. We're looking forward to having you with us, so write soon. In partnership with the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals and on behalf of my co-hosts, Grace and Linus, my name is Lucas. Thank you so much for listening to Kids Talk Church History.